I've demanded.
No, most certainly not, Raythan said. There will be time enough to deal with it after this nation and its monarch is firmly in Yadith's grasp.
Raythan smiled to himself, turning away from the scowling Dilaf.
It's over, he realized. I actually did it. I converted the people without a bloody revolution.
He wasn't finished yet, however. Aerilon was his, but one nation still remained. Raythan had plans for Teod. Chapter 43. The door had been barred shut from the inside, but the wooden portal was part of the original Elantris, subject to the same rot that infested the rest of the city. Galadin said the mess had fallen off its hinges, practically at a touch. A dark stairwell lay hidden inside, 10 years of dust coating its steps. Only a single set of footprints marked the powder, footprints that could have been made only by feet as large as Galadin's.
And it goes all the way to the top, Raoden asked, stepping over the sodden wreck of a door.
Kolo, Galadin said, and it's encased in stone the entire way, with only an occasional slit for light. One wrong step will send you tumbling down a series of stone steps as long and as painful as one of my Hama stories.
Raoden nodded and began climbing, the doula following behind. Before the Riod, the stair must have been lit by Elantrian magic, but now the darkness was broken only by occasional thin spears of light from the scattered slits. The stairs circled up against the outer wall of the structure, and the lower curves were dimly visible when one peered down the center. There had been a railing once, but it had long since decayed. They had to stop often to rest, their Elantrian bodies unable to bear the strain of vigorous exercise. Eventually, however, they reached the top. The wooden door here was newer. The guard had probably replaced it after the original rotted away. There was no handle. It wasn't really a door, but a barricade.
This is as far as I got, Sule, Galadin said. Climbed all the way to the top of the Dolokan stairs, only to find out I needed an axe to go on.
That's why we brought this, Raoden said,
pulling out the very axe Tayane had almost used to topple a building down on Raoden. The two set to work, taking turns hacking at the wood. Even with the tool, cutting through the door was a difficult task. Raoden tired after just a few swings, and each one barely seemed to nick the wood. Eventually, however, they got one board loose, and spurred by the victory, they finally managed to break open a hole large enough to squeeze through. The view was worth the effort. Raoden had been atop the walls of Elantris dozens of times, but never had the sight of Kaye looked so sweet. The city was quiet. It appeared as if his fears of invasion had been premature. Smiling, Raoden enjoyed the sense of accomplishment. He felt as if he had climbed a mountain, not a simple stairwell. The walls of Elantris were once again back in the hands of those who had created them.
We did it, Raoden said, resting against the parapet.
Took us long enough, Galadin noted, stepping up beside him.
Only a few hours, Raoden said lightly,
the agony of the work forgotten in the bliss of victory.
I didn't mean cutting through the door. I've been trying to get you to come up here for 3 days. I've been busy.
Galadin snorted, mumbling something under his breath.
What was that? I said a two-headed Farron would never leave its nest.
Raoden smiled. He knew the Jindoese proverb.
Pherons were talkative birds, and could often be heard screaming at one another across the Jean-Douise marshes. The saying was used in reference to a person who had found a new hobby, or a new romance.
"Oh, come now," Riordan said, eyeing Galadin. "I'm not that bad."
"Sule, the only time in the last 3 days I've seen you two apart is when one of you had to go to the privy. She'd be here now if I hadn't snatched you when no one was looking."
"Well," Riordan said defensively, "she is my wife."
"And do you ever intend to inform her of that fact?"
"Maybe," Riordan said lightly. "I wouldn't want her to feel any obligation."
"No, of course not."
"Galadin, my friend," Riordan said, completely unruffled by the duelist's comments, "your people would be mortified to hear how unromantic you are." Dúladan was a notorious hotbed of melodramatic romances and forbidden love. Galadin snorted his response, showing what he thought of the average doula's romantic inclinations. He turned, scanning the city of Kei.
"So, Sule, we're up here. What do we do now?"
"I don't know," Riordan confessed.
"You're the one who forced me to come."
"Yes, but it was your idea to search for a stairwell in the first place."
Riordan nodded, remembering back to their short conversation 3 days ago.
"Has it really been that long?" he wondered.
He'd barely noticed. Perhaps he had been spending a little too much time with Serene. However, he didn't feel a bit guilty.
"There," Galadin said, squinting and pointing at the city.
"What?" Riordan said, following the doula's gesture.
"I see a flag," Galadin said. "Our missing guards."
Riordan could barely pick out a hint of red in the distance, a banner.
"Are you sure?"
"Positive," Galadin said.
Riordan squinted, recognizing the building over which the banner flew.
"That's Duke Telrai's mansion. What could the Elantra City Guard possibly have to do with him?"
"Perhaps he's under arrest," Galadin said.
"No," Riordan said. "The guard isn't a policing force."
"Why would they leave the walls, then?" Galadin asked.
Riordan shook his head.
"I'm not sure. Something, however, is very wrong."
Riordan and Galadin retreated back down the stairwell, deep in thought. There was one way to find out what was going on with the guard. Serene was the only Elantrian to be thrown into the city since the disappearance of the guard. Only she could explain the current political climate of the city. Serene, however, still resisted talking about the outside. Something about the last few days before her exile had been extremely painful. Sensing her hurt, Riordan had avoided prying. He didn't want to risk alienating her. The truth was, he really did enjoy his time with Serene. Her wry wit made him smile. Her intelligence intrigued him. And her personality encouraged him. After 10 years of dealing with women whose only apparent thought was how good they looked in their dress, a state of forced obtuseness led by his own weak-willed stepmother, Riordan was ready for a woman who wouldn't cower at the first sign of conflict. A woman such as he remembered his mother being, before she died. However, that same unyielding personality was the very thing that had kept him from learning about the outside. No amount of subtle persuasion, or even direct manipulation, could pry a single unwilling fact out of Serene's mouth. He couldn't afford to be delicate any longer, however. The guard's strange actions were troubling. Any shift in power could be extremely dangerous to Elantris.
They reached the bottom of the stairwell and moved on toward the center of the city. The walk was a relatively long one, but it passed quickly as Raoden considered what they had seen. Despite the fall of Elantris, Aerilon had spent the last 10 years in relative peace, at least on a national level. With an ally to the south, Teode's armada patrolling the northern ocean, and the mountains to their east, even a weakened Aerilon had faced little external danger. Internally, Iodine had kept a strong grip on military might, encouraging the nobility toward political squabbling as opposed to militaristic posings. Raoden knew that peace couldn't last long, even if his father refused to see that fact. Raoden's decision to marry Serene had been influenced greatly by the chance to enter a formal treaty with Teode, giving Aerilon at least partial access to the Teoish armada. Aerilines weren't accustomed to battle. They had been bred for pacifism by centuries of Elantrian protection. The current Wyrn would have to be a fool not to strike soon. All he needed was an opening. Internal strife would provide that opening. If the guard had decided to betray the king, civil conflict would throw Aerilon into chaos once again, and the Fjordelles were infamous for capitalizing on such events. Raoden had to find out what was happening beyond those walls. Eventually, he and Galadin reached their destination. Not New Elantris, but the squat, unassuming building that was the passage to the holy place. Galadin hadn't said a word when he'd found out that Raoden had taken Serene to the library. The doula had actually looked as if he'd expected such a development. A few moments later, Raoden and Galadin strode into the underground library. Only a few of the wall lamps burned, an effort to save fuel. But Raoden could easily make out Serene's form, sitting in one of the cubicles at the back, leaning over a book just where he had left her. As they approached, her face became more distinct, and Raoden wasn't able to keep himself from remarking again at her beauty. The dark splotched skin of an Elantrian was prosaic to him now. He didn't really notice it anymore. Actually, Serene's body seemed to be adapting remarkably well to the Shaod. Further signs of degeneration were usually visible after just a few days, wrinkles and creases appearing in the skin, the body's remaining flesh color dulling to a pallid white. Serene showed none of this. Her skin was as smooth and vibrant as the day she had entered Elantris. She claimed that her injuries didn't continue hurting the way they should, though Raoden was certain that that was just because she had never lived outside of New Elantris. Many of the more recent newcomers never experienced the worst of Elantrian pain, the work and positive atmosphere keeping them from focusing on their injuries. The hunger hadn't come upon her either, but again she had the fortune of coming at a time when everyone had the opportunity to eat at least once a day. Their supplies wouldn't last more than a month, but there was no reason to stockpile. Starvation was not deadly to Elantrians, just uncomfortable. Most beautiful were her eyes, the way she studied everything with keen interest. Serene didn't just look, she examined. When she spoke, there was thought behind her words. That intelligence was what Raoden found most attractive about his Teoish princess. She looked up as they approached, an excited smile on her face. "Spirit, you are never going to guess what I found." "You're right," Raoden confessed with a smile, unsure how to approach the topic of information about the outside. "Therefore, you might as well just tell me." Serene held up the book, showing him the spine, which read, "C. Seor's Encyclopedia of Political Myths. Though Raoden had shown Serene the library in an effort to sate her interest in Aeon Dor, she'd postponed that study as soon as she had realized that there was an entire shelf of books on political theory. Part of the reason for her shift in interest probably had to do with her annoyance at Aeon Dor. She couldn't draw aeons in the air. She couldn't even get the lines to start appearing behind her fingers. Raoden had been perplexed at first, but Galadin had explained that such a thing wasn't uncommon. Even before the Riod, it had taken some Elantrians years to learn Aeon Dor. If one began even the first line with an improper slant, nothing would appear. Raoden's own immediate success was nothing short of extraordinary. Serene, however, didn't see it that way. She was the type who grew annoyed when it took her longer to learn than someone else. She claimed she was drawing the aeons perfectly, and in truth, Raoden couldn't see any flaws in her form. The characters just refused to appear, and no amount of princessly indignation could convince them to behave. So Serene had turned her interest to political works, though Raoden guessed she would have ended up there anyway. She was interested in Aeon Dor, but she was fascinated by politics. Whenever Raoden came to the library to practice aeons or study, Serene picked out a volume by some ancient historian or diplomatic genius and began to read in the corner.
"It's amazing. I have never read anything that so soundly debunks Fjordan's rhetoric and manipulation."
Raoden shook his head, realizing he had simply been staring at her, enjoying her features rather than paying attention to her words. She was saying something about the book, about how it exposed Fjordal political lies. "Every government lies occasionally, Serene," he said as she paused.
"True," she said, flipping through the book, "but not with such magnitude. For the last 300 years, ever since Fjordan adopted the Dorethi religion, the Wyrns have been blatantly altering their country's own histories and literature to make it seem as if the Empire has always been a manifestation of divine purpose. Look at this." She held up the book again, this time showing him a page of verse.
"What is that?"
"Wyrn the King, the entire 3,000-line poem."
"I've read it," Raoden said.
Wyrn was said to be the oldest recorded piece of literature, older even than the Dokando, the holy book that Shu Keseg and eventually Shu Dareth and Shu Korath had come from. "You may have read a version of Wyrn the King," Serene said, shaking her head. "But not this one. Modern versions of the poem make references to Yadath in an almost Dorethi way. The version in this book shows that the priests rewrote the literature from the original to make it sound as if Wyrn were Dorethi, even though he lived long before Shu Dareth was founded. Back then, Yadath, or at least the god of the same name that Shu Dareth adopted, was a relatively unimportant god who cared for the rocks under the earth. Now that Fjordan is religious, they can't have it sounding like their greatest historical king was a pagan. So the priests went through and rewrote all of the poems. I don't know where this man Seor got an original version of Wyrn, but if it got out, it would provide a major source of embarrassment to Fjordan." Her eyes sparkled mischievously. Raoden sighed, walking over and crouching down next to Serene's desk, putting her face at eye level. Any other time, he would have liked nothing more than to sit and listen to her talk. Unfortunately, he had more pressing things on his mind. "All right," she said, her eyes thinning as she put down the book.
"What is it? Am I really that boring?"
"Not at all," Raoden said. "This is just the wrong time. You see,
Galadin and I just climbed to the top of the city wall. Her face grew perplexed. And? We found the Elantra city guard surrounding Duke Telrai's mansion, Raoden said. We were kind of hoping you could tell us why. I know you're hesitant to talk about the outside, but I'm worried. I need to know what is happening. Serene sat with one arm leaning on the desktop, hand raised and tapping her cheek with her index finger, as she often did when she was thinking. All right, she finally said with a sigh. I guess I haven't been fair. I didn't want to concern you with outside events. Some of the other Elantrians may seem uninterested, Serene, Raoden said, but that's just because they know we can't change what is going on in K.E. I'd prefer to know about things on the outside, however, even if you are a bit hesitant to talk about them. Serene nodded. It's all right. I can talk about it now. I guess the important part began when I dethroned King Iodine, which, of course, is why he hanged himself. Raoden sat down with a thump, his eyes wide. Chapter 44. Even as she spoke, Serene worried about what Spirit had said. Without her, the others had no legitimate claim on the throne. Even Roile was stumped. They could only watch helplessly as Telrai solidified control over the nobility. She expected to receive news of Telrai's coronation by the end of the day. It took her a few moments to realize the look of stunned shock her comment had caused Spirit. He had fallen back into one of the room's chairs, his eyes wide. She chastened herself for lack of tact. This was, after all, Spirit's king she was talking about. So much had happened in court the last few weeks that she had grown desensitized. I'm sorry, Serene said. That was a little blunt, wasn't it? Iodine is dead? Spirit asked in a quiet voice. Serene nodded. It turns out he was involved with the Jaskeri mysteries. When that got out, he hanged himself rather than face the shame. She didn't expand on her role in the events. There was no need to complicate them further. Jaskeri? Spirit repeated. Then his face turned dark, and he gritted his teeth. I always thought of him as a fool, but how far did this involvement go? He was sacrificing his cooks and maids, Serene said, feeling sick. There was a reason she had avoided explaining these things. Spirit apparently noticed her pallor. I'm sorry. It's all right, Serene said. However, she knew no matter what else happened, no matter where she went in her life, the shadowed vision of Iodine's sacrifice would always lurk in her mind. Telrai is king, then? Spirit asked. Soon, Serene said. He might have been crowned already. Spirit shook his head. What about Duke Roile? He's both richer and more respected. He should have taken the throne. He's not richer anymore, Serene said. Fjordan has supplemented Telrai's income. He's a Dorethi sympathizer, which, I'm afraid, has increased his social standing. Spirit's brow furrowed. Being a Dorethi sympathizer makes one popular? I've missed a lot, haven't I? How long have you been in here?
A year,
Spirit answered offhandedly. That matched what some of the other new Elantrians had told her. No one knew for certain how long Spirit had been in the city, but they all guessed at least a year. He had seized control of the rival gangs in recent weeks, but that wasn't the sort of thing a person accomplished without a great deal of planning and work.
I guess that answers how Telrai got the guard to back him, Spirit mumbled.
They've always been far too eager to support whoever seemed most popular at the moment.
Serene nodded. They relocated to the Duke's mansion shortly before I was thrown in here.
All right, Spirit said. You're going to have to start at the beginning. I need as much information as you can give me.
So she explained. She began with the fall of the Duliden Republic and Fjordan's increasing threat. She told him of her engagement to Prince Raoden and of the Dorethi incursions into Aerilon. As she spoke, she realized that Spirit understood the political climate of Aerilon more soundly than she would have thought possible. He quickly grasped the implications of Iodine's posthumous declaration. He knew a lot about Fjordan, though he didn't have a working knowledge of how dangerous its priests could be. He was more worried about Wyrn-controlled soldiers. Most impressive was his understanding of the various lords and nobles of Aerilon. Serene didn't need to explain their personalities and temperaments. Spirit already knew them. In fact, he seemed to understand them better than Serene herself. When she questioned him on the matter, he simply explained that in Aerilon, it was vital to know of each noble with a rank of baron or higher. Many times, a lesser nobleman's only means of advancement was to make deals and take contracts with the more powerful aristocrats, for they controlled the markets. Only one thing beyond the king's death shocked him.
"You were going to marry Roile?" he asked incredulously.
Serene smiled. "I can't believe it either. The plan developed rather quickly."
"Roile?" Spirit asked again.
"The old rascal! He must have thoroughly enjoyed suggesting that idea."
"I found the Duke to be an unquestionable gentleman," Serene said. Spirit eyed her with a look that said, "And I thought you were a better judge of character." "Besides," she continued, "he didn't suggest it. Shuden did."
"Shuden?" Spirit said.
Then, after a moment's thought, he nodded. "Yes, that does sound like a connection he would make, though I can't see him even mentioning the word marriage. The very concept of matrimony frightens him."
"Not anymore," Serene said. "He and Ahane's daughter are growing very close."
"Shuden and Torina?" Spirit asked, even more dumbfounded.
Then he regarded Serene with narrowed eyes.
"Wait a moment. How were you going to marry Roile? I thought you were already married."
"To a dead man," Serene huffed.
"But your wedding contract said you could never marry again."
"How did you know that?" Serene asked with narrowed eyes.
"You explained it just a few minutes ago."
"I did not."
"Sure you did. Didn't she, Galadin?"
The large doula, who was flipping through Serene's political book, didn't even look up.
"Don't look at me, Sule. I'm not getting involved."
"Anyway," Spirit said, turning away from his friend, "how is it that you were going to marry Roile?"
"Why not?" Serene asked. "I never knew this Raoden. Everyone says he was a fine prince, but what do I owe him? My contract with Aerilon dissolved when Iodine died. The only reason I made the treaty in the first place was to provide a link between Aerilon and my homeland. Why would I honor a contract with a dead man when I could form a more promising one with the future king of Aerilon?"
"So you only agreed to marry the prince for politics." His tone sounded hurt for some reason, as if a relationship with the crown prince of Aerilon reflected directly on its aristocracy.
"Of course," Serene said. "I am a political creature, Spirit. I did what was best for Teod, and for the same reason I was going to marry Roile."
He nodded, still looking a bit melancholy.
So I was in the throne room, ready to marry the Duke, Serene continued, ignoring Spirit's pique. What right did he have to question her motives? And that was exactly when the Sheod took me. Right then? Spirit asked. It happened at your wedding? Serene nodded, suddenly feeling very insecure. It seemed that every time she was about to find acceptance, something disastrous alienated her once again. Galladin snorted. Well, now we know why she didn't want to talk about it. Kolo? Spirit's hand found her shoulder. I'm sorry. It's over now, Serene said with a shake of her head. We need to worry about Telrai's coronation. With Fjordan supporting him, we can worry about Telrai, but I doubt there's anything we can do. If only there were a way to contact the outside. Suddenly ashamed, Serene's eyes darted up to where Aishi hid in the room's shadows, his Aeon nearly invisible. There might be a way, she admitted. Spirit looked up as Serene waved to Aishi. Aishi started to glow, the Aeon's light expanding into a luminescent ball around him. As the Sion floated down to hover above her desk, Serene shot Spirit an embarrassed look. A Sion? He said appreciatively. You're not angry at me for hiding him? Serene asked. Spirit chuckled. In all honesty, Serene, I expected you to hold some things back from me. You seem like the type of person who needs secrets, if only for the sake of having them. Serene blushed slightly at the astute comment. Aishi, go check with Kyine and the others. I want to know the moment Telrai declares himself king. Yes, my lady, Aishi said, hovering away. Spirit fell silent. He hadn't commented on Aishi's inexplicable lack of Sheod madness. But of course Spirit couldn't know that Aishi had been Serene's own Sion. They waited in silence, and Serene didn't interrupt Spirit's thoughts. She had given him an overwhelming mass of information, and she could see his mind picking through it behind his eyes. He was hiding things from her as well. Not that she mistrusted him. Whatever his secrets were, he probably felt he had a good reason for keeping them. She had been involved with politics far too long to take the holding of secrets as a personal offense. That didn't, of course, mean she wasn't going to find out what she could. So far, Aishi hadn't been able to discover anything about a second son of Ayin Plantation's ruler. But he was very restricted in his movements. She had allowed him to reveal himself only to Kyine and the others. She didn't know why he had survived where other Sions did not, but she didn't want to lose any potential edge his existence might give her. Apparently realizing they weren't going to go anywhere soon, the doula Galladin shuffled over to one of the chairs and seated himself. Then he closed his eyes and appeared to fall asleep. He might be unstereotypically pessimistic, but he was still a doula. It was said that his people were so relaxed that they could fall asleep in any position at any time. Serene eyed the large man. Galladin didn't seem to like her, but then he was so determinedly grouchy that she couldn't tell. He seemed a well of knowledge at times, but in other areas he was completely ignorant and totally unconcerned by that fact. He seemed to take everything in stride, but he complained about it at the same time. By the time Aishi came back, Serene had returned her attention to the book on political cover-ups. The Sion had to make a throat-clearing sound before she even realized he was there. Spirit looked up as well, though the doula continued snoring until his friend elbowed him in the stomach. Then all three sets of eyes turned to Aishi.
"Well?" Serene asked.
"It is done, my lady," Aishi informed them. "Tel Rai'i is king."
Chapter 45. Raythan stood in the moonlight atop the Elantra city wall, curiously studying the hole. One of the stairwell barricades was broken and scarred, the boards pulled free. The hole was strikingly similar to one that might have been made by rodents, Elantrian rodents, seeking to escape from their nest. This was one of the sections of the wall kept clean by the guard, and some slime tracks from the stairwell gave ample proof that those below had been up the wall several times. Raythan strolled away from the stairwell. He was probably the only one who knew about the hole. Elantris was now watched by only two or three guards, and they rarely, if ever, patrolled the wall walk. For now, he wouldn't tell the guards about the hole. It didn't matter to him if the Elantrians snuck out of their city. They wouldn't be able to go anywhere. Their appearance was too distinctive. Besides, he didn't want to bother the people with worries about Elantris. He wanted them to remain focused on their new king, and the allegiances he would soon declare. He walked, Elantris to his right, Kei to his left. A small concentration of lights shone in the evening's darkness. The royal palace, now Tel Rai'i's home. The Aerilish nobility, eager to show devotion to their new king, were in near unanimous attendance at his coronation party, each man vying to prove his loyalty. The pompous former duke was obviously enjoying the attention. Raythan continued to stroll in the calm night, feet clinking against the stones. Tel Rai'i's coronation had occurred with expected flair. The former duke, now king, was an easy man to understand, and men who could be understood could be manipulated. Let him enjoy his diversion for the moment. On the morrow, the time would come for payment of debts. Tel Rai'i would undoubtedly demand more money from Raythan before he joined Shu-Dareth. Tel Rai'i would think himself clever, and would assume that the crown gave him even greater leverage with Fjordan. Raythan, of course, would feign indignation at the cash demands, all the while understanding what Tel Rai'i never could. Power was not in wealth, but in control. Money was worthless before a man who refused to be bought. The king would never understand that the weirnings he demanded wouldn't give him power, but would instead put him beneath the power of another. As he glutted himself on coins, Aerilon would slip away from him. Raythan shook his head, feeling mildly guilty. He used Tel Rai'i because the king made himself such a wonderful tool. However, there would be no conversion in Tel Rai'i's heart, no true acceptance of Yadath or his empire. Tel Rai'i's promises would be as empty as the power of his throne. And yet, Raythan would use him. It was logical. And as Raythan had come to understand, the strength of his faith was in its logic. Tel Rai'i might not believe, but his children, raised Dorethi, would. One man's meaningless conversion would provide for the salvation of a kingdom. As he walked, Raythan found his eyes consistently drawn toward the darkened streets of Elantris. He tried to focus his thoughts on Tel Rai'i and the impending conquest of Aerilon. But another matter tickled at his mind. Grudgingly, Raythan admitted to himself that he had wanted to walk the wall of Elantris this night for more than one reason. He was worried about the princess.
The emotion bothered him, of course, but he didn't deny that he felt it. Serene had been a wonderful opponent, and he knew how dangerous Elantris could be. He had realized this when he gave the poisoning order, determining the risk to be worth the gain. After waiting 3 days, however, his resolve was beginning to waver. He needed her to live, for more reason than one. So, Raythan watched the streets, foolishly hoping that he might see her below and console his conscience that she was unharmed. Of course, he hadn't seen anything of the sort. In fact, there didn't seem to be any Elantrians about this evening. Raythan didn't know if they had just moved to other parts of the city, or if the place had grown so violent that they had destroyed themselves. For the princess's sake, he hoped the second was not true. "You are the Yorn, Raythan," a sudden voice said. Raythan spun, eyes searching for the man who had approached him unseen and unheard. A Sion hovered behind him, glowing vibrantly in the darkness. Raythan squinted, reading the Aeon at its center. Dio.
"I am he," Raythan said cautiously. "I come on behalf of my master, King Eventio of Teode," the Sion said with a melodious voice. "He wishes to speak with you." Raythan smiled. He had been wondering how long it would take Eventio to contact him. "I am anxious to hear what His Majesty has to say."
The Sion pulsed as its light pulled inward, outlining the face of a man with an oval face and a full chin.
"Your Majesty," Raythan said with a slight nod, "how may I serve you?"
"No need for useless civility, Yorn,"
Eventio said flatly.
"You know what I want."
"Your daughter."
The king's head nodded.
"I know that somehow you have power over this sickness. What would it take for you to heal Serene?"
"I have no power of myself," Raythan said humbly. "It was Lord Yadith who performed the healing."
The king paused.
"Then what would it take for your Yadith to heal my daughter?"
"The Lord might be persuaded if you gave him some form of encouragement," Raythan said. "The faithless receive no miracles, Your Majesty."
King Eventio slowly bowed his head. He had obviously known what Raythan would demand. He must love his daughter very much.
"It will be as you say, priest," Eventio promised. "If my daughter returns safely from that city, I will convert to Shudareth. I knew it was coming anyway."
Raythan smiled broadly. "I will see if I can encourage Lord Yadith to return the princess, Your Majesty."
Eventio nodded. His face was that of a man defeated. The Sion ended the contact and floated away without a word. Raythan smiled, the final piece of his plan falling into place. Eventio had made a wise decision. This way, at least, he got to demand something in return for his conversion. Even if it was something he would have received anyway. Raythan looked down at Elantris, more anxious than ever that Serene returned to him unharmed. It was beginning to appear that within the next few months, he would be able to hand Wyrn not one heathen nation, but two.
Chapter 46. There had been times when Raedon had wished his father dead. Raedon had seen the people suffering and knew his father was to blame. Iodin had proven himself deceitful in his success and merciless in his determination to crush others. He had delighted in watching his nobles squabble
while his kingdom collapsed. Eirilan would be better off without King Iodine. Yet when news of his father's demise actually came, Raoden found his emotions traitorously melancholy. His heart wanted to forget the Iodine of the last 5 years, instead remembering the Iodine of Raoden's childhood. His father had been the most successful merchant in all of Eirilan, respected by his countrymen and loved by his son. He had seemed a man of honor and of strength. Part of Raoden would always be that child who saw his father as the greatest of heroes. Two things helped him forget the pain of loss: Serene and the Aeons. When he wasn't with one, he was with the other. New Elantris all but ran itself now. The people found their own projects to keep them busy, and there were rarely arguments that required his attention. So he came to the library often, drawing Aeons while Serene studied. "There is surprisingly little information here about modern Fjordan," Serene said, poking through a tome so large she had nearly needed Raoden's help to carry it. "Maybe you just haven't found the right book yet," Raoden said, as he traced Aeon Ihi. She sat at her customary desk, a pile of books next to her chair, and he stood with his back to the wall, practicing a new batch of Aeon modifiers. "Perhaps," Serene said, unconvinced. "Everything in here seems to be about the old empire. Only that book on historical reconstruction even mentions the Fjordan of the last 100 years. I assume that the Elantrians would have studied other religions with care, if only to know what they were up against. As I understand it, the Elantrians didn't really mind competition," Raoden said. As he spoke, his finger slipped slightly, breaking its line. The Aeon held for a moment in the air, then faded away, his mistake invalidating the entire construction. He sighed before continuing his explanation. "The Elantrians figured they were so obviously superior to anything else that they didn't need to worry about other religions. Most of them didn't even care if they were worshipped or not." Serene considered his comment, then looked back at her book, pushing aside the empty plate that had held this afternoon's rations. Raoden didn't tell her that he increased her portion of food, just as he did for every newcomer during their first week. He had learned from experience that gradual reductions in food intake helped a mind adjust to the hunger. He started his drawing again, and a few moments later the library door opened. "Is he still up there?" Raoden asked as Galadin entered. "Kolo," the doula replied, "still screaming at his god." "You mean praying?" Galadin shrugged, wandering over to take a seat next to Serene. "You'd think a god would be able to hear him, no matter how softly he spoke." Serene looked up from her book. "Are you talking about the Yorn?" Raoden nodded. "He's been standing on the wall above the gate since early this morning. Apparently he's been petitioning his god to heal us." Serene started. "Heal us?" "Something like that," Raoden said. "We can't hear him very well." "Healing Elantris? That's a switch." Her eyes were suspicious. Raoden shrugged, continuing his drawing. Galadin selected a book on farming and began searching through it. Over the last few days he had been trying to devise a method of irrigation that would work under their particular circumstances. A few minutes later, when Raoden had nearly completed the Aeon and its modifiers, he realized that Serene had put down her book and was watching him with interested eyes. The scrutiny made him slip again, and the Aeon faded away before he even realized what he had done. She was still regarding him as he raised his hand to begin Aeon Ihi again. What? He finally asked. His fingers instinctively drew the first three strokes, the line across the top, line down the side, and dot in the middle that were the beginning of every aeon. You've been drawing that same one for the last hour now, she noted. I want to get it right. But you have, at least a dozen times in a row. Rayodin shrugged. It helps me think. About what? She asked curiously, apparently bored of the old empire for the time being. Lately, about Aeon Dor itself. I understand most of the theory now, but I still don't seem any closer to discovering what has blocked the door. I feel that the aeons have changed, that the old patterns are slightly wrong, but I can't even begin to guess why that would be. Maybe something's wrong with the land, Serene said offhandedly, leaning back in her chair so the front two legs rose off the ground. What do you mean? Well, Serene said speculatively, you say that the aeons and the land are linked, though even I could have told you that. Oh? Rayodin asked, smiling as he drew. Did your training as a princess include some secret lessons in Elantrian magic? No, Serene said with a dramatic toss of her head. But it did include training in the aeons. To begin every aeon, you draw a picture of Aerilon. I learned that as a little girl. Rayodin froze, his hand pausing in midline. Say that again. Hmm? Serene asked. Oh, it's just a silly trick my teacher used to make me pay attention. See? Every aeon starts the same way, with a line at the top to represent the coast, a line down the side that looks like the Etade Mountains, and a dot in the middle to be Lake Aelono. Galadin stood, wandering over to look at Rayodin's still glowing aeon. She's right, Sule. It does kind of look like Aerilon. Didn't your book say anything about that? No, Rayodin said with amazement. Well, they claimed there was a connection between the aeons and Aerilon, but they never mentioned that the characters actually represented the land. Perhaps the concept was just too elementary. Galadin picked up his book, folding something out of its back, a map of Aerilon. Keep drawing, Sule. Otherwise that aeon's going to vanish away. Rayodin complied, forcing his finger back into motion. Galadin held up the map, and Serene moved to stand at the doula's side. They looked through the thin paper at the glowing aeon. Dorloken, Galadin swore. Sule, the proportions are exactly the same. They even slant the same way. Rayodin finished the aeon with one last stroke. He joined the other two, regarding the map, then looked over at Serene. But what's wrong, then? The mountains are still there, as is the coast and the lake. Serene shrugged. Don't look at me. You're the expert. I can't even get the first line right. Rayodin turned back to the aeon. A few seconds later, it flashed briefly and disappeared. Its potential blocked for some inexplicable reason. If Serene's hypothesis was right, then the aeons were even more closely linked to Aerilon than he had assumed. Whatever had stopped Aeon Dor must have affected the land as well. He turned, intending to praise Serene for the clue. However, his words choked in his mouth. Something was wrong. The dark splotches on the princess's skin were the wrong color. They were a mixture of blues and purple, like bruises. They seemed to fade before his eyes. Merciful Domai! He exclaimed. Galadin, look at her! The doula turned with alarm, then his face changed from worried to awed.
What?
The princess demanded, shooting them nervous looks.
What did you do, Sule?
Galadin asked.
Nothing,
Raedon insisted, looking at the place where his Aeon had been.
Something else must be healing her.
Then he made the connection. Serene had never been able to draw Aeons. She had complained of being cold, and she still insisted that her wounds didn't hurt. Raedon reached out and felt Serene's face. Her flesh was warm, too warm, even for a new Elantrian whose body hadn't completely cooled yet. He pushed the scarf off her head with trembling fingers and felt the nearly invisible blonde stubble on her scalp.
Eidostomai, he whispered.
Then he grabbed her hand, pulling her out of the library.
Spirit, I don't understand, she protested as they entered the courtyard before Elantris's gate.
You were never an Elantrian, Serene, he said. It was a trick. The same one that Yorn used to appear as if he were an Elantrian. Somehow, Raethan can make it seem that you've been taken by the Shaeod when you haven't.
But, she objected.
Think, Serene, Raedon said, spinning her around to look him in the eyes. The Yorn preached in the wall above them, his loud voice garbled by the distance. Your wedding to Roile would have put an opponent of Shu-Dareth on the throne. Raethan had to stop that wedding, and he did it in the most embarrassing way he could contrive. You don't belong here. He pulled on her arm again, attempting to lead her toward the gates. She resisted, pulling against him with equal strength.
I'm not going!
Raedon turned with surprise.
But you have to go. This is Elantris, Serene. No one wants to be here.
I don't care, she insisted, voice defiantly firm. I'm going to stay.
Aerilon needs you.
Aerilon will be better off without me. If I hadn't interfered, Aiden would still be alive, and Tel'Rai wouldn't have the throne. Raedon fell still. He wanted her to stay. He longed for her to stay. But he would do whatever it took to get her out of Elantris. The city was death. The gates were opening. The Yorn had recognized his prey. Serene regarded Raedon with wide eyes, her hand reaching up toward him. The splotches had nearly completely vanished now. She was beautiful.
You think we can afford to feed you, princess? Raedon said, forcing harshness into his voice. You assume we will waste food on a woman who is not one of us?
That won't work, spirit, Serene shot back. I can see the truth in your eyes.
Then believe this truth, Raedon said. Even with severe rationing, New Elantris only has enough food for a few more weeks. We raise crops, but it will be months before we can harvest them. During that time, we will starve. All of us, the men, the women, and the children. We will starve unless someone on the outside can get us more supplies.
She hesitated. Then she was in his arms, pulling close against his chest.
Curse you, she hissed. Domai, curse you.
Aerilon does need you, Serene, he whispered back. If what you say is right, and a Fjordel sympathizer is on the throne, there may not be much time left for Elantris. You know what the Dorethai priests would do to us if they had their way. Things have gone very wrong in Aerilon, Serene, and you are the only one I trust to fix them.
She looked into his eyes,
I will return.
Men in yellow and brown churned around them, pulling the two apart. They shoved Raoden aside.